ॐ मङ्गलां गुरुदेवाय देवे मत्रिक्ष मङ्गलं मङ्गलं भक्ता वृन्देव्यो सर्वलोकाय मङ्गलम् ॐ स्थापकाय च धर्मस्य सर्वधर्मस्वरूपिणे आवतार वरिष्ठ रामकृष्णाय मङ्गलम् ॐ सारशिव समारम्भं शङ्कराचार्य मध्यमम् अस्मर आचार्य प्रायन्दं वन्दे गुरुं परम्परम्. So we're picking up from a couple weeks ago. Last week we had a very great honor of my senior guru bhai, Swami Paramananda Saraswati, was here and he gave a scholarly talk on the Vedantic tradition, and which he later titled The Truth Beyond Speech, about how the truth is beyond the descriptions of it and the categories that we use to organize our thinking. So we'll give a slightly different style of talk today. we've been speaking the last couple, about a month and a half, on the Narada Bhakti Sutra. It's been our topic. And it's one of my favorites, very concise little texts. In just a few simple short verses, so much detail, so much the essence of the devotional tradition is given. Because Sri Ramakrishna has said again and again that in this present dark age, this Kali Yuga, the easiest and most appropriate way to approach God, there's many ways to approach God, but the most appropriate for this age is Bhakti Yoga, as taught by Narada. He's specified. So understand what is that teaching of Narada Muni on Bhakti. And so it started with the definition of Bhakti as a different, it's as a parama prema, right? It's love, but of a different type. Parama means different, other, supreme, highest. Right, it's a different type of not our ordinary love, not our ordinary attachments and responses. Right, something of a different quality, and then with so many details are given, hinting what the different sages have said about devotion. But Narada gave his own definition. He gave a definition about love being complete, absolute, uninterrupted sacrifice or not sacrifice. Dedication of everything to God. That was his definition, one of his definitions. Right? And extreme pain at forgetting God. That was the core of his definition. And then to illustrate this point, he gave the example of the gopis of Raj. Right? So this is where we've been going the last few weeks. And then there are some verses about the supremacy of devotion and like this. So now we could go, we have some idea, at least some mental idea, what devotion is, as what Narada means by devotion. How to get that is the next question, right? So the Bhakti Sutra, the first 33 verses is kind of the preliminary definitions. And from verse 34 on, now it's more practical. What can we do to attain devotion, right? So it starts, Tasya sadhanani gayanta acharya. The acharyas, the great teachers, right? The great gurus, they sing, about the means of attaining bhakti, right? Actually, he uses this beautiful terms, gaya, right? The great acharyas, they don't tell us, they sing in their songs, in their hymns, in their outpourings, the way to devotion. So actually, so many philosophical books have been written, but the essence of all philosophy is in the songs of the mystics. You can almost see, right? They sing the truth, the methods of how to develop devotion. Acharya here means like the great teachers. But acharya also comes from the word, the same word as to act, right? So not just teachers. Anybody can be a teacher, right? An acharya is somebody who is his or her own realized knowledge behaves in a way where his teachings are one with his actions, right? Teaches through his own behavior. Through his own song, the means of attaining it. Tattu vishaya tyagat, sangha tyagat cha. Tat, that. Now, of course, what is that? That is devotion. Tattu vishaya tyagat. Vishaya means the objects of the senses, the objects of pleasure. Tyag. Right, so first, actually, it's good how to attain devotion. In anything, there's a positive and a negative way of describing it. Right, our Guruji, Swami Omananda, says, we've mentioned this, I think, a couple weeks ago, that if you only have two places in the world, Banaras and Allahabad, Prayag, and there are always only two places in the world, Allahabad and Benares. If you're going towards Benares, you're leaving Allahabad behind. If you're getting away from Allahabad, you're going towards Benares. Right? So this is, first it gives a negative definition. If you give up the things of the world, the pleasures of the world, then your mind's automatically going there. Right? But it's a little negative to speak like this. There's only one or two verses in the whole Bhakti Sutra that gives that negative definition. By renouncing the objects of attachment, the objects of the senses. And it says, Vishaya Tyaga, Sangha Tyaga. And Sangha Tyaga, again, these words are, because they're sutra, there's many layers of meaning. Sangha means attachment in this sense. Not only to give up the objects, but actually, really, it's not giving up objects. It's attachment to the objects, right? Association. Or sangha also means company, right? So it's a secondary meaning. And so people say, well, that's just all company. It can't be giving up good company, because we'll see in a few verses. These verses are only about good company, actually, right? So it's not. So it means giving up worldly company or it's hard to say bad company, evil company. Today we're discussing some teaching of Sri Ramakrishna. He says, from time to time, if you're constantly immersed in this in the life of samsara, in just worldly life and domestic life and work and job and just the external things, night and day, then the mind doesn't have a chance, right? Entangled. It's easy to get entangled. So what Sri Ramakrishna is telling M, time to time, you have to go into solitude. And solitude means without people, right? I mean, whatever that means, right? There's layers of solitude. And so you can, in solitude, you can call to God without any other attachments, right? And when you do that, if the mind can get that taste in solitude by your own, without any distractions, then when you enter the world and you do all your duties in the world, right, you won't get caught, right? And you do everything, Sri Ramakrishna says, you do everything, you do all your duties, but with thoughts always thinking of God. These verses will explain that momentarily. One attains devotion by renouncing objects of enjoyment and renouncing attachment or company, like this. But that's the negative. Now we'll do the positive. Avya vritta bhajanat. Means uninterrupted worship. Really, what that means is with great difficulty give up all desires. No, I can't give up desire. You can give up the objects of desire. That's easier. Right, I can not, and then slowly try to give up my attachment to those. But it doesn't mean that I have anything positive, right? So the easiest way to accomplish this ignoring external objects is just to continuously worship God, right? This word, only two word, avyavritta bhajanat, by ceaseless worship. That's that. How do you develop devotion? By ceaseless worship. In the same section of the Katamrita, Sri Ramakrishna says, when M asks him, what's the way to live in this world? How do we realize God in this world, living in this world? He says, the first thing he says, you have to sing God's name and glories all the time, right? All the time, without break, right? Ceaseless worship, when everything becomes worship, and you never forget God. That's the way to develop devotion. Lokapi Bhagavat Guna Shravanam Kirtanam. Loke api Bhagavat Guna Shravanam Kirtanam. Bhagavat Guna means God's qualities, right? The glories of God, right? Bhagavat Guna Shravanam Kirtanam. Always hear about God's glories. Always sing God's glory, names and glories. Same teaching as Sri Ramakrishna. Sing God's name and glories at all times. But he says, loke api, even api, loke in regular life, right? So it's like, this means even in doing regular things. Of course, when we sit, we gather at a temple, we gather around in front of Ma, right? And we sing bhajans, that's the course, that we're singing God's name and glories, right? But what about when we leave the temple? On the way back home, when you get home, when you go to sleep, when you wake up, when you make breakfast, when you drive to work, when you're at work, right? When you're the things that even in his ordinary activities. Yeah. In every situation, right? In regular, not just, of course, in sadhana time, we focus on God and God's name, God's glory, we meditate. The time of meditation, uninterrupted meditation. But at all times, to remember God, to sing his name and hear his name and glory, her name and glories, right? Sri Ramakrishna described as you do your work with one hand. One hand you hold on to God, the other hand you do your duties, right? Right. But you're not all the time, the duties aren't always there. So when the duties aren't there, then you hold on to God with both hands. That's the time of meditation, that's the time of kirtan, bhajan, puja. Sadhana time you hold with both hands. You try not to, anything is distraction. But in our normal life, those things are extractions, those are our life. Those are details of our life, they're important. Right? But don't forget God, do it. Sri Ramakrishna described an example of this is like polymer. What's the term for polymer? If you're deeply in love with somebody in regular life, if you're deeply in love with them the whole day long, you're thinking of that person. You may cook, you may work, you may go to school, you may go to work, but still your mind's always thinking. Your mind's always there, right? A more classical, a more everyday, mundane example is like a toothache. You can do everything, but you don't forget the ache, right? You don't. So it shows you can remember. You never lose that. Shemakish is an example of a lady holding a pitcher of water and talking and all these things. You can do so many 10 different things, but your mind doesn't drop the pitcher, right? You know that you can. It's where you actually. I'm remembering because I was thinking of Swami Paramananda, who was here, left yesterday. He was a very senior disciple of our Guru Maharaj. Swami Vishuddhivananda Saraswati. So I'm remembering this morning, I was thinking, he brought up a lot of memories of our Guruji's teachings. And I was thinking, one especially he told me, he says, I was speaking at Harvard University, right? I don't know if it was actually a big talk or just some devotees and some student program he was invited. Probably Indian community invited him, so he spoke. And I told them, he says, "So Guruji, what did you tell him?" I told them, I keep God in my pocket, right? And he said, God in your pocket, Guruji, what does that mean, right? He says, they raised your hand. What does that mean, God in your pocket? The students were, he was telling me the story, you know? And I said, the boy who answered, I'm remembering, all memories are coming. The boy who asked me this question, I says, what's your name? He said, my name is John. What do you do? I'm a student. Well, how do you make your money? Hand to mouth. Right, just job here and there. So he said, if the president of the United States came and gives you a check for $1 million, and you put that in your pocket, where will your mind be? He says, yes, Guruji, yes, yes. Everybody says, Guruji, the way he told the story. Yes, everybody started clapping. Yes, yes, my mind will be in the pocket. It's just a piece of paper. It's nothing, right? But you put value in it. Where it is, your mind, you walk everywhere. Your mind never leaves that piece of paper that's in your pocket. That was the example. I put my value on God. Right, no matter what I do, I never forget. My mind's always, God's in my pocket, my mind's always in my pocket. Simple example of a beautiful thing Guruji told. So by ceaseless worship, by hearing and chanting about the Blessed Lord's qualities, even during ordinary activities of life. Okay. This chanting God's name and God's glory is so... Guruji used to also tell us that God's name is like the entirety of God in seed form, right? Because if you think like example he gave I'll use the same example he pointed to me at that time. But if I point to Ambikananda, I'm want to meditate on Ambikananda. Right, it's a very auspicious thing. So everybody should meditate on Ambikananda. He's very auspicious, right? And we'll all become benefited. But if you meditate on Ambikananda, you think, "Oh, what is it? Okay, well, I know how he looks. I know his person. I've known him for a long time, and remembering his name, I remember his qualities and his education, his personality, and how he eats, and how he sings, the work he's doing. You know, bit by bit, you try to hold all those things. But that's only no matter how much I think about him, I've only thought." The surface, right? And most of him remains unknown to me, right? I can't think of those things. And those things I'm thinking about, they say more about me than about him, actually, right? The things that you stand out and your understanding, not him. But if I think of his name, it means the whole thing. It means his whole personality, the things we know about him, the things we don't know about him, right? So it's like the entirety of the known and the unknown divinity is in the name. It's in the power of God's name. So if you take that name as a seed, like a seed, what's a seed? A seed contains an entire tree potential in it, right? In a tiny little form. Everything in the tree is potentially in the seed, right? So everything about God is in God's name, right? So you take that and you plant that, then something happens, right? So Guruji used to always also say that if you plant a seed, you get a plant, right? That's naturally how it goes. So if you plant a thought, you get, if you say a thought, you get an action, right? Because our thoughts lead to our actions. If you plant, if you repeatedly thinking something, you plant a thought, you plant an action, you get a habit. Because our actions repeated become our habits. You plant a habit, you get a character. Sum total of our habits become our character. You plant a character, you get a destiny. Right? So Guruji used to say that thought is all important. Thought becomes action, becomes character, becomes habit, becomes character, becomes destiny. Right? Therefore, thoughts all on his. This is part I remember very distinctly. One of the last things he repeated to me. He says, thought is all important. Think the highest thought. What's the highest thought? He says, God is the highest thought. The entirety, inconceivable infinity, that's our idea of God. Right? St. Anselm defined God as that which nothing greater can be conceived, even as an intellectual idea, whether God exists or not. Right? The idea of God, there's nothing greater than that. It's by definition. God means the thought, the being, to which nothing greater can be imagined. That's God. Right? So that God, you plant, you take it in seed form, and you plant it daily. Right? And you plant it in meditation, you plant it in your daily life. Right? By hearing and chatting about the Blessed Lord qualities, even during ordinary activities of life. There's a verse in Padma Purana. Naham tishtami vaikunte. Vishnu, Krishna is speaking to Narada Muni. And he says, where am I? Where is my place? I'm not in Vaikuntha. We think Vishnu lives in Vaikuntha. He says, Vaikuntha is not my place. You won't find me. You go to Vaikuntha, you won't find me. Right? And he says, well, yoginam hrideshu, yeah. Also in the hearts of the yogis, people think, oh, that either I go to heaven and find Vishnu in his heaven world. He's not there. What about the heart and the heart of a yogi? I'm not there either. Right? This is interesting, right? And he says, yatra gayanta mad bhaktaha, where my devotees sing, are singing about me, singing to me, singing my name. Bhakta tatra tishtantu o Narada. No Narada, no, I'm in that place. Right? Where devotees sing my name, sing my quality, sing to me. Right? There I'm there. I'm not in heaven, I'm not in the hearts of yogis, I'm where devotees sing. Right? Even Jesus said, where two or more are gathered in my name, there I am. Right? Same idea. Mukyantastu mahat kripayaeva bhagavat kripa dashatva. So its first is one attains devotion by renouncing objects of enjoyment and renouncing attachment. Okay. One attains devotion by ceaseless worship. One attains devotion by hearing and chanting about the Blessed Lord's qualities even during ordinary activities of life. Mukyataha, but mainly. Right. These are all good, right? It's all good things to do. Be renowned, self-controlled, all the time worship. But really, right? Bhuktasija, mahat kripa eva. It's mainly by the mercy of a mahatma. By the mercy of the grace, or the mercy or the grace of a great soul. Mahatma. Mahat kripa. Indeed, Eva. Indeed, it is mainly by the mercy of the great souls. Right. And it says, Bhagavat Kripa Lishatva, or a little bit of God's mercy. Bhagavat Kripa. Right. It's mainly, the main cause of our devotion, awakening of devotion, is not even chanting, is not even worshipping, not even renouncing. If we go back, if we actually see, what led our individually our kind of awakening to spiritual life. We didn't first like, oh, I'm going to be really renounced. I'm going to renounce all the objects of desires, and then when I did that, then I got bhakti. Right? No, that's not how it works. You know, if we have some, when we get a little bit of awakening of devotion, that maybe leads us to have a little self-control and like this, right? But it's not caused by it. And also, you know, we didn't start chanting and therefore got devotion. We're chanting because we have a little devotion. But what awoke in that devotion? Right? Almost always, you think, if you go back, it's the grace of a great soul. Mahatma here, Mahat also means great soul. It means it means guru. It means great soul. It means devotee. So the great souls are not just like the avatars and the siddhas and the gurus and the prophets and the saviors and like Krishna and Ram and Buddha and Ramakrishna and like this. It's that those are great, great Mahatmas, no doubt. And they're still present to awaken us, right? But it's also the devotees. We can see actually the company of devotees is nothing more precious to awaken. You mentioned the other day that Krishnadas line that he said that the bhakti is a disease and you catch it from somebody who has it, right? It's just the way it works. In the company of devotees, your devotion awakens. But really, mainly, one develops bhakti by the mercy of great souls or by little grace of Bhagavan, Bhagavad Kripa. So the little bit of grace of Bhagavan comes in the form of devotees. That we can see. If we have devotees, company of devotees of great souls in our lives, that's the grace. That's a little bit of God's grace. Right? There's a line of the song, a Vaishnava song, it says, by the grace of Krishna, one gets guru. Right? And by the grace of guru, one gets Krishna. Right? Right? So it's like this. You know, it's like God's grace gives us a company of devotees and great souls. And the company of great souls, that raises our mind and gives us God, awakens that. Unique. Bhagavad Kripa. Next verse, Mahat Sangastu. Mahat, great souls. Sangha, the company of great souls. Tu, but. Dulabha. Difficult to get. Right, that's the thing, right? That's an interesting. The company of great souls is very hard to get. Right? Actually, Shankaracharya in the Viveka Chudamani, we quote this a lot. So I met it. This is one of the, you know, everybody has like a handful of like statements or verses or sayings that you keep with you. This is one that's always with me, you know. He says that in this world, three things are very rare. Right? First is a human birth. If you think out of all, even in this, what to speak in this world, there's 8,400,000 different species of life in the Vedic understanding, right? How many of those are humans? Out of all the living beings in the universe, how many are in a human body? Right? Even in this room, there's billions of souls in this room, right? And about 30 of them in human bodies, right? Even in your body, there's millions of souls have their own bodies on the human body, right? There's microbes and animals and insects and moths and lots of moths right now, right? But how many are in a human body, right? So we have, it seems to be, right? Of course, this is humans thinking this. It seems that only a human body can realize, can awaken and realize God. There's examples of animals realizing God, but always by the grace of saints. Right, by the grace of somebody, it raises them, by holy company. Right, that even an animal realizes God by holy company. Right, but generally, a human body is such a rare thing. So we have that. That's difficult. Right, if you read in the Upanishad, it describes incredible details what it takes to take between human bodies, how to get a human body. Right, it's not guaranteed. Okay. Then, that's the first thing. Second is mumukshu, right? A desire for God, a desire for freedom, a desire for liberation, right? Because many people have human bodies. There's many, but out of those, how many hunger for God, really? That's also rare, right? You know, that one of the old temple president, Laguna Beach Hare Krishna Po, he said that the name Bhagavan being used here, Bhagavan means one who possesses six glorious qualities, right? Like fame and wealth and knowledge and renunciation and beauty, all those things, the possessor of all is called Bhagavan, God, right? And I said, well, God is fame. What does that mean? He says, oh, you just, like, go. Everybody's heard of God, right? Right. But just mention his name at a party, and you'll see everybody goes, oh, he's not he's famous, but not popular, right? Cause, right. But you mention God to a devotee, they get excited, right? Most people are like, oh no, you know, it's like, right? You know, it's not even in a religious nation. Right, the actual hunger for God is rare, right? So if we have a human body, that's a great benefit, and we have something else difficult to get, is hunger for God, right? And the third is, I'm forgetting the original in the Sanskrit, I think it's called Mahapurusha Sangha or something, or the company of a great soul, same thing, company of a great soul, right? Because that's even rare. Here it says, this is very rare, very rare. To have a human body, some interest in spiritual life, and then to be in the company of souls that help us attain that's very, very rare. If we have those three things, we should then we consider ourselves very lucky, and it could change in a second, right? Like our friend Tushita Krishna, he told me, you don't know if your next breath is coming or your next birth. Right? We could die right now, and what our next birth, we don't know. Right, so right now, even right now, we go home with something right now, our mind could be damaged, right? Even in this body, we don't know if we can continue our spiritual. Right now, we have a good body, healthy body, spiritual interest, and good company. What this is the time. Right? These three things may not stay. These are rare things, and we may not get again. Or we don't know when we'll get again. No guarantee. But now we have them, right? That's a great, very great good fortune. Right. So this Mahat Sangha, how do you say it? Dulab, right? And it also says Agamya, means also very difficult to understand. It's difficult to get and difficult to understand, right? Because what the effect of good company, effective company of devotees, of sadhus and guru, that we cannot fully comprehend. We don't have the ability. Sometimes we take it for granted. We don't realize what we have. It's not easy to see. It's like they're just regular people, right? Even the great saints, we go, they're great saints, but they're just regular people, right? What about the devotees? We know amongst ourselves, we can see all of each other's, we see our own faults, we see each other's faults, right? But we cannot fully understand the benefits, right? And amogha. And infallible. Sadhu Sangha, good company, is difficult to get, difficult to understand, and infallible. It has to bear effect. If you have it, it will definitely affect. Right, there's a verse of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, several places he says it. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastrakaya. All the scriptures say, Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, right? The company of holy people, the company of the holy people, holy company, holy company, holy company. Lava Matra, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhihoya. Lava Matra, Matra is, what's a Matra? In Vedic cosmology, we have huge, vast space of countless trillions of universes and the divine consciousness of Brahma, like, a huge like that, and huge periods of time, and we can't even comprehend, right? Billions and trillions of cycles and ages like that. And we also have infinitesimal measurements of time, right? And one of such infinitesimal is called a matra. Matra is it's described as the time it takes for a speck of dust to shimmer in a beam of light. Just like very interesting. That's literally given, and then from that it's built. 10 of those become this. 10 of those become this. I become. Then you get a minute. Then you get an hour. Then you get an eight. Then you get yugas and like that. You know. But that tiny bit of time, it says lava matra, a fraction of that amount of time. Not even that amount of time. A fraction amount of that time of holy company, right? Sarva siddhihoya gives all accomplishment, accomplishes everything. If you have even, so we think, I mean, we've had at least that, right? We've had at least a fraction of a moment of holy company. Right? The scriptures, he said, all the scriptures say, sadhu, a fraction of that is sufficient. It's done. Right? Sarva siddhihoi. Right? A very beautiful verse. Sadhu sangha sarva shastrikoya. Lava matre sadhu sanghi sarva siddhihoya. I don't chant Bengali properly, so please forgive. It's in Bengali. Right. The association of great souls is difficult to achieve, difficult to understand, but infallible. Very important. Labhyate pi tat kripaya eva. That holy company is obtained, labhyate, only by God's grace. Right? It's only if you have holy company, you have God's grace. That's the proof. Does God love me? Do I have God's grace upon me? You can think, do you have holy company? And God loves you. Guaranteed. God loves you anyway. And this mystery of God's grace is interesting because grace, I was reading some commentary on this idea, and grace has the idea, we call it, in the Vaishnava tradition, they call it causeless mercy. I mean, it has no cause. Right, like if I mean, God's mercy is on us without us doing anything. If we did it, then it'd be karma, right? If we do something and then God gives us a blessing, that's karma, right? This is not mercy. Mercy is in spite of us. God loves us. You know, it's not because of us, right? But it is because of us, not because of our actions, because of who we actually are, right? And so Sri Ramakrishna, he said that the wind. What is that famous line? The wind of God's grace is always blowing, right? Not everybody puts the sail up, right? And so not every, and even so, God's grace, we know when we catch it. I read something this morning in my early morning reading. I read something very interesting. Somebody, maybe Bhuteshananda, was telling about Shardananda, Sri Ramakrishna's disciple. He says, we saw all the devotees, not all devotees, the workers and the employees, thousands of people met Sri Ramakrishna. Right? He says, but they had no effect on them. He says, I saw, had almost no effect on them. Right? So they had proximity to holy company, to God incarnate. Right? But they didn't have really sangha. They weren't really connected. Right? That's the thing, is like that's another point, actually. By God's grace, we get that connection. We can be in the company of devotees, but not in their company, right? The sangha, we have to be, it means attachment. We have to get some contact, some deep contact, you know. Company of great souls is obtained only by God's grace. Why is that? So what's so great about God, about holy company? We know what's great, but why is it so powerful? Tasmims ta jana beda dvat, beda bhavat. This is because, this is a secret, God and his devotees are not different. Right? This is a mysterious thing, right? God and his devotees are not different. One time Sri Ramakrishna was at the front of the Radhakanta temple in Dakshineshwar, and there was an old lady reciting Bhagavat. Right? She had a little stand, and this is a common thing. She's in front of the Krishna, beautiful Radhakrishna Murti. Our Krishna, Radhakrishna, is made after that Radhakrishna. Radhashishi Radhakant, and she was reciting Bhagavat, Srimad Bhagavatam, right? And Sri Ramakrishna saw that a light come from the murti of Krishna and go and touch the book, the Bhagavat, and also then go and touch the lady, the devotee, the bhakta, right? And so he said this was a realization that Bhagavan, bhakta, and bhakta, these are the same. They're not different. They're different, you know. So actually, he used to repeat and tell people to repeat Bhagavata Bhakta Bhagavan. Bhagavata Bhakta is like a mantra. Bhagavata Bhakta Bhagavan. Bhagavata Bhakta Bhagavan. When I first devotees that I met many years ago, a different group of devotees, very sweet devotees, they would do a kirtan of this. Bhagavata Bhakta Bhagavan. Bhagavata Bhakta Bhagavan. Very sweet. But you know, because Chakor said, repeat, say after me, repeat Bhagavata. He tests people. There's people who would come who had a different school of thought. He says, can you say Bhagavata Bhakta Bhagavan? They're the same? Oh, I can't go that far. You know, some people were nervous about like that. Right? The devotee and God are not the same. They're not the same, but they're not different also. Actually, there's in the poetic language of the devotional saints, they said actually the devotee is almost greater than God. Of course, this is a bhava, not tattva. Tattva, God is infinite, and the devotee is infinitesimal, right? But by bhava, why is that? Because God holds the entire universe within him, within her, right? But a devotee holds God within him, right? So that means that's even, so even the greatest possible being is God, but the devotee as if holds God. It's a beautiful image of Lord Ram opening his chest and seeing Ram, Hanuman opening his chest and seeing Ram there. Who is this Ram? He's the infinite God, right? And within him, but he's being held as if. Of course, this is sentiment, not tattva. This is bhava, right? You know, that the devotee is not different like this, right? Also, because also the God uses the devotees. God uses the saints, the sadhus, and the guru, right? And so it becomes, Guruji also, that same example of the check, right? He went off on that a little, another illustration. He said, you're a poor man, and I give you a check for $1 million, now you have God on your pocket, right? So now you're a millionaire, right? Right, so who made you a millionaire? Right, you could say, well, you made me a millionaire, right? No, actually, the money makes you a millionaire, not the person. But the person who gave you the money also made you a millionaire. Right, there's no difference between the money and the person who gives it. Like, what Tripura Maharaj says, what's greater, the giver of the gift or the gift? They're not different. The giver of the gift, they're so connected, you can't separate them. You can't have the $1 million without the person who gave you the $1 million. Another way, there's different ways of looking at this verse, how the God devotees or the guru or the saints are not different from God, right? You can't separate them, right? There's a danger sometimes with unbalanced emotionalism and fanaticism, then we like, oh my God, it's God, and it's like, you know, like when we say Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Deva Maheshwara, right? I know, I love my gurus, right? But I know that Swami Omananda or Vishuddhivananda did not create the universe. Like Brahma. He's not actually Brahma in the sense that he created the universe. He doesn't sustain it and won't destroy it at the end of time. Right? What is he? But you know, it's like, but we see the one who is Brahma, who creates and sustains and destroys the universe, he acts as Guru. Right? So it's like we have to understand that we think, oh, Guru is God. We sometimes say like that, right? And that's true. We also have that bhav. But Sri Ramakrishna kind of turned it. He says, God is the Guru. Right? It's like the God has become the Guru. God comes in the form of Guru. Also, we can say, if you say, I am God, maybe some danger in that philosophy, right? Because when we say I, we mean the body, we mean the ego. We have unripe realization and attachment. We say, I am God. Aham Brahmasmi, right? Rather, you say, God has become everything, including me, including you, right? It takes the ego out of it, right? God has become everybody, right? God is acting through me, God is acting through you, rather than I am acting through everybody. That becomes... It's true, but the danger is an unripe realization, right? So that's another thing, is that we the worship of the saints, the worship of the devotees, the worship of the guru, it can easily become, if it's not digested properly, become fanaticism, right? And kind of a dangerous fanaticism, right? But Sri Ramakrishna said that Satchitananda is the guru, right? And Satchitananda acts as guru tattva, right? But you can't separate, so God and guru, They're to the devotees, they're not different things, right? But the guru always points to God. That's the devotee always point. A devotee will never let himself be worshipped or should be worshipped like that. He points always points towards God, right? Final verse. We're on a short section tonight. we can open it up, but. Imagine, so what is that you can attain devotion by renouncing the objects of desires and giving up attachment to those objects in bad company, by constantly worshipping, and by singing and hearing and singing God's names and glories, even in the midst of our regular activities, but really by holy company. So the holy company, and by, which is God's grace. So the final thing is interesting because the sutras don't give extra words, right? The nature of a sutra. Any word that can be left out is left out. So here's something that's repeated twice, right? To make that, so you have to think in the form of a sutra, if it's something said twice, it's against the rule of a sutra, Right? So he's to say the same thing. It's not said a little different thing. So it says, Tareva Sadhyatam. Tareva Sadhyatam. Right? Attain that alone. Attain that alone. Right? It's repeated twice. Right? You can imagine it's repeated 1,000 times, right? Therefore, with all this nice, like, what is that? Holy company. Attain holy company. Work for that. Whereas strive only. Another way of saying that Sadhyatam is like strive for that. Right? If we want to do anything, keep the company of devotees. And it's not always easy. It's difficult to get, difficult to understand, but infallible, right? So sometimes we have to make extra effort to be in the company of the devotees. Both in physical proximity, we have to take the effort also to have the proper mental mood to have connection like this, you know. Not easy. Attain that alone, attain that alone. Strive only for that, strive only for that. So short, but important. You know, the next section of the Bhakti Sutra will be the counterbalance of this. If it's strive for holy company, what's the opposite of that? Careful with bad company. Right? Because this idea here is that we are very influenced by those whom we come in contact. Not general contact, it's like, don't have bad company. When you go out to the store, and maybe that person's a meat eater, and that person's a non-believer, and that person lies, cheats on his wife, or maybe, I don't know, they shouldn't touch my food. That's not what's meant by shunning evil company, right? This sangha, this deep connection, right? Be careful. Don't let wicked influences in your mind, you know, in your energy system. It has a huge effect on your mind. Paramahansa Yogananda, he said, that company is stronger than willpower, right? That's a very deep thing, right? And therefore, when my meditation on it is that therefore to choose the proper use of willpower is to choose your company carefully as much as possible. You can't always choose, you know, but you can choose. You may not be able to affect or make who you come in contact in your work and your life and external world, but you can choose who you let into your house, who you let into your heart, who you let into your intimate relationships, who you let into between you and God, right? That you have to be careful, right? And so there's a whole series of verses that we'll discuss next week on being very cautious about, because as good company is hard to get, hard to understand, and infallible, right? Bad company, they're easy to get, right? They're easy to get, right? And also infallible. Has a strong effect, so we have to be careful. And I thank you for your kind attention. If there's any comments or questions, since we have a little time, we want.
Ramakrishna said that he always tells, he said that in the company of the devotee, you'll take the name of the God, but if you are on the other side, you'll act as your company.
Yeah, definitely. Only that, the company is not just a person. Company is also, Sri Ramakrishna described, even like how you dress and wear. Right, he says that if you dress very nice in dhoti and kurta like that, you behave a certain way. Right, you behave. That's actually why my sannyas guru, he says, we wear this because I think this automatically, looking the way I'm dressed, you behave in a certain way. It awakens those samskaras in the mind, right? And if Sri Ramakrishna said, if you wear English boots, you start walking like an Englishman, he said. And the effect of that is there. Any other comments?
Mm-hmm. That's the gist of
That's true of like not only but like if you're on a diet, right, and you put some sweets in front of you, that's bad company. Right, even that has an effect on you. Right, we have to. So you adjust within reason. You can't be weird and artificial about life. Goes off, but in your inner world, you have to be careful what you let in. Right, careful, discerning. You know.
Other thing, like a little contradiction, but the other thing, like you know, become God, like you know, but if you're looking at everything good, right?
Mm-hmm,
right?
But
then human have negative qualities.
Yes.
A devotee has a negative quality.
Yes.
Like something negative.
Yes.
Maybe a negative thought.
Yes.
Perception.
Yes,
something
yes.
which is like not sattvic.
Yes, yes.
So how does God become that? Like, you know, how does...
But the devotee is not finished yet. Devotees are still growing, right? But you see, in the Gita, there's a verse. The actual verse is not in my head, but I remember it. But it's like, imagine like the moon, right? The saints say like this. Imagine the moon, right? You see a beautiful full moon. How beautiful it is, right? But if you look, actually, the moon has spots. And the moon also waxes and wanes, right? But in spite of that, we say how beautiful the moon is. Because the gist of the moon is just giving beautiful cooling light, although there's some fault there, right? So you don't immediately point out, why should I look at the moon? Look, it has faults. Right? You see, the gist of the moon is giving this beautiful cooling effect. Right, so the devotee, there may be faults. Actually, the verse in the Gita says that even if one has committed the most horrible acts, not even like the most, actually the term is like abominable sin, not just sin, abominable sin, right? Still, if he is devoted to me, I consider that person a devotee and pious, right? Not that the sin is not a mistake and has a karmic consequence, but how few, there's many like well-adjusted people in this world that aren't devotees. Right, and I always joke we're a bunch of maladjusted people, right? But we're devotees, right? So that's the one thing we have. Actually, the thing that holds us together is our common interests, our devotion. To me, that's the most precious thing. That you can say, like, that's the moonlight. You know, you see that. That's what's being worshipped. That's what's being. But also, like the Shivalingam, Sri Ramakrishna Kirtigapo, or Swamiji. These stones start up high in the Himalayas, and down the river they start banging into each other, right? So, and slowly then they come into these beautiful forms of Shivalingams, right? So similarly, even in our spiritual life also, because of our contact with each other, slowly we correct each other, right? And not only amongst devotees, but even amongst the sadhu community, sadhus need sadhu sangha, and also sadhus and the grihastha community, because much of the good behavior is sadhus because the grihasthas are expecting good behavior, right? You know, that's a big thing. You have to, like, so there's a lot of that, right? Also, of course, we know the gurus correct the disciples, but how much the disciples are correcting the guru? Because the disciple creates the guru in a certain sense and therefore brings out those things, right? So it's, we're all working on each other, and slowly, bit by bit, or works in progress,
cleansing and purifying.
Cleansing and purifying, yeah, yeah. But how precious that is, that's the point. The point is.
Yes, yeah, so there is no purification without the company. Right? Yeah. Come to that.
Yes, yes, yes. Sitaram. Jai Ma Kali, Jai Thakur.